Chapter 8. I wish I had known that we needed a plan for handling our money. When Carolyn and I were dating and later decided to get married, it never crossed my mind that we needed to discuss how we would handle our finances. Neither of us had any money. After all, we both were recent college graduates. During college, we both lived in dormitories. I had never rented an apartment, never paid an electric bill, never had a car payment, and seldom ever bought clothes. I worked a part-time job to pay for my college expenses. After my junior year, my parents were kind enough to buy me a car and pay the insurance. The clothes I wore came as gifts for my family at Christmas and on birthdays. Carolyn's experience was similar, except that before enrolling in college, she worked full-time for 1 year, had her own apartment, and paid her own bills. The only financial plan we had was that she had agreed to work full-time while I pursued graduate studies full-time. That plan lasted for 2 months. Carolyn's job required her to begin work at 5:30 a.m. She is not a morning person. Her health was spiraling downward, and we both agreed that this plan was not working. We decided that we would both look for part-time afternoon jobs. She, rather quickly, was hired by one of my professors at the university, and I found a job at the local bank. Neither of us made a lot of money, but it was enough to pay the rent on our student apartment, the utilities, and gas for the car, as well as put food on the table. Neither of us bought any clothes for 3 years. When I finished my graduate studies and began my first full-time employment, we had a grand total of $150. In those years, we had no money problems because we had no money. As long as a couple agrees to sacrifice temporarily in order to reach a stated objective, in our case graduate school, and as long as there is enough income to pay for the necessities, they are not likely to have marital struggles about money. Our struggles came after we started making money. We still had never discussed a plan for handling our money. After 3 years of sacrifice, we were both excited about spending. However, we had very different ideas about what purchases we should make and when. With no plan in place, finances became for us what it has become for many couples, a battlefield. I will not bore you with our specific skirmishes. The point I'm making is that if we had developed a plan before marriage, we would have saved ourselves a lot of useless fighting. The plan that I will share in the rest of this chapter is a simple plan of money management that has helped thousands of couples avoid financial warfare. Let's start at the beginning. Our money, building unity. The first foundational stone in developing a financial plan is to agree that after marriage, it will no longer be my money and your money, but our money. At the heart of marriage is the desire for unity. For better or for worse, we intend to live life together. The implication is that we will share our income and work as a team in deciding what to do with our money. Incidentally, this also means that his or her debts will become our debts, and we have the responsibility to develop a plan to repay these debts. It also implies that his and her savings will become our savings. If you are not ready for this kind of unity, then you are not ready for marriage. Saving, sharing, spending. The second step in developing a financial plan is to agree on a percentage of income that you will save, give away, and spend. There are essentially only three things you can do with money. You can save it, you can give it away, or you can spend it. Deciding the percentage that you will allocate to each of these categories is an important step in making a financial plan. Through the years, I have encouraged couples to adopt the 10-10-80 plan. Save and invest 10% of your net income. The first purpose of saving is to have emergency funds in case of sickness or loss of job. The second purpose of saving is to pay off any credit card and consumer debts that the two of you may have. The third purpose of saving is in order to make major purchases such as home and automobile. Retirement saving is normally a part of one's employment package. I strongly encourage couples to participate in whatever retirement plan is offered by their employer. Another 10% is to be given away. The purpose of giving is to express gratitude for what has been given to you. The ancient Jewish and Christian traditions encourage the giving of 10% of one's income. The happiest people in the world are not those who have the most money, but those who have learned the satisfaction of giving to help others. An early Christian text says, "It is more blessed to give than to receive." For Carolyn and me, the giving of 10% of our income was never a struggle. We had both been taught that principle by our parents and had practiced it as individuals. Thus, we freely agreed that this would be the pattern of our giving. Neither of us has ever regretted this decision. However, if this concept is new to one of you, it will take discussion and negotiation to find a meeting place on this concept. If you can't agree on 10%, then what percentage can you agree to give? The process of negotiation and agreement before marriage will save you from struggling with this issue after marriage. The other 80%. That leaves 80% to be divided among mortgage payments or rent, utilities, insurance, furniture, food, clothes, transportation, medicine, recreation, etc. How this is distributed is your decision. The more you spend on housing, the less you have to spend in other areas. The most common mistake young couples make is to purchase a house that is beyond their income. Before marriage, it is difficult to know the exact cost of housing and utilities and many other categories listed above. I have often encouraged couples who are contemplating marriage to find a couple who has been married about 3 years and is living in an apartment or house similar to what you would contemplate buying or renting. Let them share with you the approximate cost of housing and utilities. They may also be willing to give you a list of their other expenditures. This will give you a somewhat realistic idea of what to expect. A common guideline is to spend no more than 40% of your net income on housing and utilities. Wise shopping does make a difference. In spite of the jokes we hear about the wife who spends $5 on gas driving to an outlet store where she saves $2, the wise shopper can realize substantial savings. Such shopping takes time and energy. It is work and involves a great deal of insight, but the benefit will be revealed in extra money that can be applied to other needs or wants. Mastering the art of good shopping is worth the effort involved. For practical help on how to shop wisely, see The Little Book of Big Savings. Another extremely important matter that needs to be discussed by every couple is credit buying.